My name is Adam Smeets. I'm from Loyola University Chicago, and I'll be convening this session. We are here for What Happened to the Computer Lab. I'd ask that if you have a laptop or a cell phone, if you can make sure it's muted or on vibrate mode so we don't have the entertaining song choices during the presentation. Might be kind of fun at the same time. Also, online, you may find the survey opportunities are available to rate the session and what you felt and some feedback. It's really important for not only EDUCAUSE, but also the presenters to take back information on what they presented. And I'll also start with introductions. Jason Davis is the manager of classroom technology and customer service at the University of Minnesota, Duluth, right? Is that the, okay, excellent. And then we'll go there to Beth Schaefer. Her role, she is the assistant director for client services at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, right? Excellent. And John Henderson, who's the director of instructional technology services at Eastern Illinois University. Okay, excellent.
Good morning. Interestingly enough, this is a follow-up to a presentation that three of us did in, or four of us did in at the Midwest EDUCAUSE in Chicago 2 years ago. Two of the faces have changed, and mine is still the same. So, but we welcome you here this morning. Interestingly enough, we're going the data that my two colleagues will show. Is very, very similar to what we presented 2 years ago as well. So it's fairly interesting to look at. Eastern Illinois is located in Charleston, Illinois, which is about 3 hours south of Chicago on the east side of Illinois. We have about 320 acres. We are pretty much a residential campus, enrollment of about 12,040. This is what I took off our website. Degrees offered are bachelor's, master's, and specialist. Faculty student ratio is 1 to 15, and there's our accreditation. Technology on campus. Last year, we completed all 205 classrooms for technology enhanced classrooms. And as you can see, the instructor workstation, computer, audio speakers, and sound system, DVD and the ceiling mounted projector, turning point receiver, and the screen in the front of the room is our standard AV. Then upon faculty request, we will put in smart boards, star boards, document cameras, or whatever else that they desire. Interestingly enough, ATAC, which is the Academic Technology Advisory Student Committee for campus, is student fees. We started out with 22 labs when I first went to Illinois in 1998. We are now down to 17 in the public labs, but departmental labs went from 20 to 34. So as we started closing some of our public type labs or discipline-specific labs, discipline-specific started growing, which we thought we could start reducing labs and because of laptops and what have you. So that didn't work. Some of the data that I'm showing is from, excuse me, our College of Education or our housing department, but it's estimated about 97% of our students bring APC to campus. The College of Education determined that they had like 94% and 50% of those had a laptop. We have not done a survey similar to what my colleagues have done. We are in the process of developing a survey for students. But if we look at our labs and using our key server, we have about 2,300 logins per day. Our prime usage is between 1 and 5. And they're launching Word or Explorer or Firefox, okay? The next thing that I'm going to talk about is how we decided to start changing some of our labs. And 57% of our students, we did a survey last spring, wanted some kind of input and did have input into how we were going to design our Gregg Technology Center. Gregg is one of our open labs. We had 61 or 65 machines in there. We had a classroom that they could practice presentations. We had a multimedia center in there where they could do their film editing and what have you. This is what the training classroom looked like before, and this is what it looks like now. Also, interestingly enough, the students gave us some advice, and we went to a dual boot system. We are now using all IMACs in our open labs. This was the open lab before, and this is the open lab now. We have a cafe lounge where they can use their laptops and use drink food, have food, or whatever. This is the multimedia center. We had five stations, but we found that we could, with the IMAC, that we could go down to three multimedia stations. And this is tied directly into our curriculum. Back in that classroom, one of the things that we are doing this year is open training for students in iLife, in all of the software that's connected with the curriculum. We've hired a person to do just training for students, which our faculty appreciate because now they don't have to take class time. We also set up a collaborative work area where they can check out a laptop and three or four students can work all at one time. We set up a video conferencing area where they can use either our Sony system or set up an Illuminate session as well. And the last thing that we did at Eastern was to try to develop the concept of a regional lab, thus not having three or four labs in one building, but maybe departments sharing. This has taken a long time to come on board, but this regional lab happens to be with five different sciences departments. It's located on the north end of campus. We'll be keeping statistics on it to see how well it's used. It's an old math lab which we thought we had closed, but so we'll see how the five departments work together. I'm going to turn it over to Beth because she has some statistics that will do us well.
Morning, everybody. Like John said, my name is Beth Schaefer. I'm from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. The University of Wisconsin system has about 26 schools, 13 of which are four-year and 13 of which are two-year schools. We're one of the two doctoral granting institutions located on the lovely shores of Lake Michigan, about 90 miles north of Chicago. Our enrollment right now is a little over 30,000. As you can see, our undergraduates at 25,000. Faculty and staff, about 35,000. Our central IT staff, 125, which is supplemented by fluctuating anywhere between 175 to 200 student staff. Distributed IT staff on campus are probably about 125 too. So we have, I apologize, that number is wrong, 14 schools and colleges with the addition of a school of public health and a freshwater school just this past fall. What we have at UW-Milwaukee are six public campus labs. We have one in our student union, our residence halls, our business school, library learning commons. We have a specific Mac lab. And one in Bolton Hall, which is kind of the central location, which is where our help desk, walk-in tech store, and tech repair are located. We have a total of 450 computers running Windows XP and Mac OS X. Some changes for us in the past year and a half have been within our College of Engineering. We had a lab located there, which was a 24-hour facility. We've turned that facility over because the school is expanding with new faculty and needed the space for them. What happened to that space is we were able to work with the new Library Learning Commons and we pretty much doubled what we had. So I'll show you a picture coming in the next couple of slides of the new Learning Commons. So we've remodeled in the past year our student union and Library Learning Commons. We've also gone to an unstaffed model, which was a little difficult for us at first, and it's taken us about a good semester to figure out how we do support for those labs. Some of the common issues that we have are printing in the labs, where that's one of the things that we have to constantly be monitoring. What I don't include in our 450 computers is we have about 130 Sunray terminals, web kiosks, located around campus. Computer ownership on campus. Personal desktops are at 49% and laptops are at 83%, which is pretty low compared to national statistics. These numbers came from an ECAR study that was done with all of the UW schools. And the percentage of our students that are using our labs is 19%. I realize this is a little small. Our slides are up on the EDUCAUSE website, but if we're looking at total launches for application usage from October 2008 to October 2009, Explorer is going to be our first thing that people are using. Word is second, Firefox, RealPlayer. So this is our top 20. If we're looking specifically at a month usage for October this year, I just pulled these numbers. Explorer's number one and RealPlayer's number two, followed by Word, Firefox. So it makes us kind of wonder about what's happening in the labs if they're using RealPlayer and not Word. Jason's going to be coming up. He's fresh off of a new data study, and I'm going to be embarking on one in the next few months, so it's going to be one of the things we're going to be looking at. Give you an example of the number of launches that we have within a month. You'll see within the weeks, October 5th, 12th, 19th, 26th, this is the range of when during the week, Monday through Saturday through Sunday, when the launches are happening during the week. For October 2008 to 2009, our total number of users that we had were 62,000. Our total logins were 579,000. So our average number of logins per day was about 1,600. And I took for an example Bolton Hall, where you can see in blue is the number of users, and then the red on top of it is the total number of launches or logins for our machines. This is a Monday through Friday lab, and the little thing you see there on the end is an anomaly because we have some students that work in a 24/7 help desk who log into those machines sometimes. If we're going to look at our hourly logins, here's our sine wave of when activity happens. Our Library Learning Commons is a 24/5 facility, and that's the only one we have on campus that is a 24-hour facility. So we see usually between 9 and 3 every day is when the main activity is happening in the labs. A picture of our student union. Like I said, we've recently remodeled this. It was a closed environment where people entered through a door. What happened is it was opened up to a general facility. Some of the interesting comments that we've heard from students is they don't like not being able to queue up and find a machine. It's sort of a parking lot type situation where they have to wander around and just wait for a machine to open up, and there they are. So those are some of the comments we're getting from that. Our Library Learning Commons, this is just opened this past fall. Like I said, 24/5 availability. There's a coffee bar in it. There's about 200 computers, and there are classrooms and teaching labs located in this facility. This is a joint effort between our libraries and our IT. So I was in with the discussions early on for what we would be doing for equipment and how we would be supporting that. We, the IT folks, also have a help desk that's located in the Library Learning Commons, and we work along with the librarians. The librarians provide the training, general training for our students that are going to be working in that area. This is Bolton Hall. This is just one of our typical regular labs. People come in, queue up, use the machines. You can see a consultant at the front here. Printers in the back, just a typical looking computer lab for us. And Jason is next.
So we put these demographic slides up here so that if you don't like what you're hearing up here, you can say, well, we have 5% more students than that. This has nothing to do with us. And if you like us, you can say, well, we have students. This could work. So we're similar in many ways, commonalities and differences. We support computer labs too. So what we did here was we ran a survey and used lab stats. Does anyone in here have lab stats? So you know what lab stats data is like. It's kind of like drinking out of a fire hose. So we use surveys to try to get some sort of sanity in our measures, and we use lab stats to sort of verify our survey results. So in 2007, 80% of our students had laptops. A little bit less than that used our labs. As laptop use increased up to 95%, strangely lab use also increased. You know, the elephant in the room here, and probably a reason that a lot of you are here, is that maybe 10 years ago, laptop universities started popping up. And if you're somebody who's supporting computer labs, then you start with the stages of grief at that point. So the first stage of grief is shock, followed by denial. And we went through that one. And then pretty soon you're bargaining, oh, we can work with laptops too, we'll still have jobs. Eventually you get to anger, damn students and their laptops. That's followed by depression and eventually acceptance and hope. There's where we're planning on putting all of our computer lab machines into the new breakwater reef in Lake Superior for the safe harbor. But that's not the way it's worked out. It's actually, by our observation, and by the way, there's about a year and a half in between these results. It was spring 2007 to fall 2009. And we're finding that our computer lab use is as vibrant as ever or more so. So we started speculating as to why kids are using our labs, and so far we have no idea. But this is where we, one of our points of inquiry, bringing your laptops to campus. Back in 2007, 60%, almost 60% of our students occasionally or never brought their laptops. Now it's dropped more to a 50-50 between those who occasionally or never bring it or usually or always bring it. So we asked them, why do you use our labs instead of laptops? This is just 2009 data. It's actually hot off the presses. It closed on midnight on Sunday. So they cited group work. They cited software that they don't have, better or faster hardware, and 50% have admitted, yeah, I just don't want to carry my laptop around. So we were a little bit, at least half right on that one. A big change from 2007 to 2009 is students have reported that they need a computer for group work increasingly, and so from 68% up to like 83% of students are expecting to use technology resources for group work. A new question this time around for us, again, we're trying to figure out what's going to happen with the future of computing labs. And for a long time, we've been wringing our hands saying, this is probably the last year we're going to have these labs, and we're going to start closing them down. So we're wondering if these different mobile computing devices are going to factor in. As of midnight on Sunday, our students have reported that 2% of them have netbooks, 24% have either an iPhone or an iTouch, and another 15% have a BlackBerry or some other smartphone. But again, this is the same group of students who are reporting 95% laptop ownership and right now 83% use of our computer labs. So here's some of that lab stats data. You see this same sine curve in just about every trend that you try to run in a small lab, a big lab, across all three of our organizations. My network guy is here in the back and he'll tell you this is what network traffic looks like. It's basically, depends on where you are, but basically in our case, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. every day, everything is bonkers and it tails off and builds up. So one of the other theories that we have about why people use our labs, well, of course, it's the academic specialized software that costs too much to put on a laptop. Except that it's not. So this is all stuff that can be done in the cloud with a netbook. It can be done with your smartphone. It can certainly be done with your laptop. But that's not, that's sort of, where are we now? So We're theorizing, like we did when the laptop U came out, and like we did when laptops started to get cheap and ubiquitous and more campuses were requiring laptops of their students. We were predicting the demise of the computer lab. But sort of like the Mark Twain quote. So we're wondering if netbooks are the thing that are going to kill it. We're wondering if it's ever going to go away, and we sort of want to open it up for questions and discussion. And that's a bunch of interesting things you said there, but one thing in particular, the notion that group work and flexible space, and I think we all are playing with things along those lines. John and Beth showed you some of their examples, and we have those too. I agree with you that that's an important area to press into. Our experience so far is that every new resource like that we put out there doesn't diminish any use of any of the previous resources. They just keep filling that up. And I went to a campus out east where they had put in their sixth coffee shop, and they said that they could put in five more and they would sell enough coffee to make it all work. So I don't know if that's comparable or not, but it seems like it sometimes. I'll let these guys answer that too, but we use Uniprint, and we have for about 5 years now, and we subsidize printing, only keeping pages at 5 cents a page for black and white. We don't subsidize with a certain number of pages to start with, and we went from somewhere in the 4 to 5 million pages a year to about two million pages a year the first year that we switched. And then it's sort of built up maybe to 2.5 million pages now, 4 or 5 years later. So
currently what we have is the Pharos print release stations. We don't subsidize our printing, and it's 6 cents a page duplex that we're doing right now. We really didn't see any change in printing patterns, although in the past year printing has, we've seen an increase in the campus dorm, in our school of business, and in the lab that's in the union is where we've seen an increase in printing. I can anecdotally say that I know when printing goes down, that's what they're coming into the labs to do, because they're running lab to lab to try and get it done. Unfortunately, we had our print server go down last month, and I happened to be standing there as they were running around trying to find a printer to print at, going building to building. So printing is one of the main priorities that we're still seeing for having the labs on campus.
We have two systems on campus. One is Pharos, and the kids use their Panther card where they have money on the chip. And the other one is a system that was created by our librarian, and that goes to the accounting office, and their parents have to pay it. So so we have those two, but we also have a web-based that our librarian developed as well, so that they can have that in the queue, go to any lab on campus and print it out. So that's what we're doing with printing.
And incidentally, Pharos and Uniprint are the same thing. So I think John's using Dual Boot Max.
I didn't hear the question, but yes, we are using Dual Boot Max, and it's been very well accepted on our campus. I contribute that partially to the increase of usage this year in some of our labs. In those labs, we don't have any PCs. We just have the Dual Boot machines.
We do, as we have an opportunity to upgrade a lab, we do create open space, and we have power and Ethernet and, of course, wireless available for laptops. And but we also have taken the open areas that are not classrooms that have computing resources, and we've tried to add levels of flexibility to those spaces. So for instance, we'll have a large monitor. Well, I've got a neat echo going here. We'll have a large monitor and a wireless keyboard and mouse that you can swap around to have three or four people in a group working at one space. In one space that's a collaboration with our College of Liberal Arts, we have movable furniture so that you can reconfigure the room in several ways, but it's a computing lab.
With the remodel of our library learning commons, we had a small space where we had 100 machines, tables, rows, that kind of thing. Moved out to the learning commons where there's two separate areas, things flow. There's specific areas where machines are kind of lined up. And then there's also the consideration that there is the movable furniture that we have. There's the whiteboard areas where the students can work together. There's power for those things. It's fully wireless in the facility. So we do have that in one area on our campus right now.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. For us, I think we're thinking about it differently. We're not thinking in terms of what should the kids be doing on these stations or resources. We're more thinking, what are they going to do and how can we try to accommodate that? And that's tempered with, what is it that the faculty want the students to get out of this experience? But they're gonna flow in whatever direction they go in, and I think we're thinking of them, we're using dirty words like customer and consumer, and you know, when we can get away with it, and we're thinking about the students as somebody who, you know, they have a certain set of desires and needs, and if we can get them through here and teach them a few things and they're happy along the way, you know, our life is a little easier too.
We recently come upon that very thing where in our, I'm gonna go back to the Library Learning Commons, the librarians would notice that people were on Facebook or they'd be on Twitter or whatever they were gonna be on. Our campus computing policy says that we actually have a campus computing policy that says that if it's in the academic vein, then they can be using the computers. And it's not for us to really be determining if it is in the academic vein of what the student is doing on that particular piece of equipment. It could be that the faculty member does have their assignment up in Facebook because that does happen on our campus. So if we can tell that it's blatant misuse and you know, there's something that may be going towards something that may not be legal, we'll definitely step in and, you know, ask the person to, you know, log off of the machine. We do accommodate for students sometimes if they are seeing that someone, if they do have the need to be using the machine, and, you know, we do see that there's blatant misuse of it. We'll ask them to step off the machine too, but we really can't, we won't on our campus do that. We're hearing it from our students, and in some cases we aren't hearing it from our faculty though.
I think we've all had either the same or an increase, and in some cases it's migrated from centrally supported labs out to departmental labs, but it's been a steady increase. On our campus, it's a combination of perceived customer need. So, for instance, our library and IT department collaborate on providing these resources, and we'll take the lab stats measures and survey results and things like that and try to do things that the students want, and increasing the number of stations has been part of that. But we also have a lot of faculty and departmental driven initiatives and silos, just like you do probably.
I think in our Greg Technology Center, we actually decreased the number of machines, even though we have an increase in usage. But in the rest of it's driven by the disciplines that the other labs are in.
I'll just say that our student union, we have an agreement with our auxiliary services, and we work together with them. They were the ones who had requested that more machines go in so they could see more traffic in the student union, which is right next to the Taco Bell and Burger King and all that kind of stuff. So it was business driven in that case.
That's what we have been. That's sort of when we were going through those grief stages and we were in denial and bargaining. That's really where we were. We said the software is so expensive that there's no way that a laptop university can succeed in a four-year institution because of all this specialized software. And what's happened in the meantime is we all get into bed with Microsoft, and now it's only $10 for every student to have that, so that software argument goes away. You have VMware type solutions where you can virtualize. Arguably the licensing may catch up to us in that, or you know, may bite us in that. But the big thing is even though we have a lot, we have about 200 software packages in our lab, and a lot of them are concurrently licensed, 30 copies, very expensive. You can get them in any lab, but only 30 launches at any given time. They're not using those when they go into the labs. As you saw from the one slide I put up, they're using stuff that is the cheap, free, easy stuff. So I don't know if that's going to be the case. It's certainly going to be a factor, but it hasn't been the big factor yet for us.
We use a Citrix server for that, for the specialty software, and it's classroom driven, so that we set it up through LDAP and what have you, so that each instructor chooses which software that they want to use, and the student can get to it from his laptop or the lab using the Citrix server, so we don't have to put it on each individual machine.
Yeah, I'll start. We have 7:30 a.m. to 11 p.m. hours Monday through Thursday, and then slightly more limited hours Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and when things ramp up during midterms and finals, we stay open till 2 in the morning. And what we find is students typically report on surveys or through the student association that they want 24/7 labs, but the lab stats don't really bear it out. So we'll probably pilot a 24-hour lab at some point, but we haven't gone that far yet because the usage pattern just hasn't really supported it. I know these guys have some 24/7 resources.
We don't have any 24/7. We do run 24/7 2 weeks before finals, and the rest of the time we're open from 7:30 in the morning till 2 a.m., and then we have limited hours on the weekends.
We run the 24/5 operation in our libraries, and it was a joint decision with our libraries to be doing that. One of the major considerations that we had, though, was budget. So we went in together on a request to the EdTech fundings, the student EdTech fundings on campus, to specifically fund for those positions. Otherwise, we wouldn't have had the monies to support that 24/5 operation.
The way trip is. That's actually a major function for us is teaching, and that I think a point of inquiry for us is going to be, I mean, we actually schedule our labs, most of our labs are scheduled like any other classroom, so there's some open time and there's some teaching time in them, and then we have enough open lab space that can't be scheduled to sort of allow for general student use. But I think one of the things that may drive computing use might be faculty decisions in terms of how they teach. So that's a line of inquiry for us to start doing some focus groups and surveying of our faculty.
Yeah, the discipline specific labs have to be scheduled for classes. They have to be in our scheduling for the classes. We have two open labs that do not have to be scheduled for classes, and that's the Gregg Technology Center and the library.
We do have requests from our faculty to be using computer labs for teaching. One of the main reasons is because at the beginning of the semester, when our mediated classrooms get booked, if the faculty don't realize that they're going to need some technology during the semester, what they do is they'll come to us and they'll request to be using the computer labs. We're seeing an increase in that, as we're not seeing an increase in, we are also seeing an increase with having mediated labs or mediated classrooms on our campus.
And just as a side note, another one of our denial stage arguments was that laptops would not work quickly enough in a teaching environment. They wouldn't be similar enough. Some of them wouldn't have a charge. The kids would fire them up and not have the right software, so on and so forth. And I teach a class on the side every semester, and ironically, I couldn't get a space in one of my computing labs. So I had my students bring their laptops, and it worked great. So I don't believe that one either anymore. That's a really interesting question. I'm not sure I know what I want the students to do. I'd have to figure that out first. I think that if the faculty came to us, or our space guru who manages all the space on campus came to us and said that they would like to do that, we would certainly explore it. I'm sort of agnostic on student behavior. As long as they're not hurting anyone, let them do what they want to do. Yeah, and I think all of us here have the multimedia hub thing going on, and we've reached out to faculty to get some partnerships going so they actually assign things that make use of that resource. I think traditionally, there's been this tension between, are we facilitators of what the curriculum is, or are we helping to drive the curriculum? And I think we've been in the former role, but maybe we're going to evolve into sort of helping to drive some of those pedagogical decisions. The Uniprint Pharos thing has some wireless printing solutions that are fairly painless to implement. We have a tech center where students can drop in to get their Microsoft Office software and things like that, and we can help them get printing from their laptops. We find they don't do a lot of printing from their laptops, even though it's relatively easy to do, and we publicize it and so on and so forth. They tend not to do it. They tend to use the existing, sit down and print resources. Actually, that's a really good point and a really good idea. I have timestamps on all those launches, so I could easily check that. So I'll get back to you on that one. Our network guys made the case years ago that the network had become something of a utility instead of a commodity, and so it was just like power. You just expect it to be there ubiquitously. And I think we're starting to look at computing resources as the same thing. It's just something that's there all around them anywhere. They expect to have it, and it comes in a variety of forms, and not necessarily any one is going to be the one piece. It's just sort of a... In our case, we see pockets of faculty who are using these devices incredibly well and not the ubiquitous use of it. And I mean, we used, when we were back in our denial and negotiating phase of grief, we made the joke that if somebody's going to carry around a laptop, they're just going to absorb technology skills from carrying it around. That's what the laptop university seemed to be at the beginning. I don't know that we've moved a lot beyond that, but I know that our users have gotten a lot more sophisticated about how they use their computers. Some would argue that that's more for entertainment and personal purposes and not so much educational purposes. But we're in that same spot. It's not woven into the curriculum the way that it could be.
If it's discipline driven, yes. Our communication disorders folks, they use their laptops in the classroom every single day. So they have to bring them. I've got a sit down with our art people when I go back because they want to start a laptop initiative. So if it's discipline driven, I think they do.
We're down to just a few more minutes here.
Again, that's discipline driven. Our technology folks use it. Our English folks use it a lot. And some of our science folks, they use the SPSS on often, Citrix. I don't think it's hurt our labs though. Kids may use it from their dorm or their apartment, but we haven't seen any decrease in labs because of the Citrix. Well, yeah, we did that with thin clients in the English department. I mean, they've been sitting there for 5 years. We can do that.
I think we have time for one more question. We did ask all those questions on our survey as well, but again, you're giving me a good idea here because I can correlate some of the answers across, do some data slicing. That's a good idea. Well, if you have other questions that are burning issues and you want to come up here, we'll stick around for a few minutes. Otherwise, thanks for your time today.